Flowers, and this is How I Create.
Welcome back to This Is How We Create. My name is Martine Severin, your host, and I am so pleased to have Candice Tavares on the show. I'll start out by reading her amazing bio. Candice Tavares was inspired to create positive, emotionally captivating images of Black women and men and families as a therapeutic outlet for the emotionally charged work she does as a palliative care pharmacist. She sees her art as an opportunity to challenge the negative narratives about Blackness that are so prevalent within the healthcare system and media at large. Her art is intended to remind Black people of their inherent beauty and value and remind non-Black folks of their shared humanity with Black and Brown people through the common bond of love, joy, and longing. Welcome to the show, Candice.
Thank you.
Candice, you are known as a illustrator, and now you've changed your medium a little bit because you work with wood. But before we get into any of that, I wanted to just have you share with us about where you grew up and how you first became interested in art.
Absolutely. So I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and my parents were very, very good at exposing me to like everything art related. So when I was a kid, I did dancing school and took music lessons. That was not my ministry. And I also took Saturday morning art classes. So it was like, I really was exposed as a kid to all of the different forms of art that I could be interested in. And I found that I was the most naturally inclined at visual arts. Like, I can see dance in my head, but my body does not do what my head tells it to do. And I love music, but I cannot play. But when it came to actually like putting something on paper or like creating with my hands, I felt like that was something where there were no rules. And my natural creativity and imagination were able to just like come through.
Oh, that's so interesting how you, even as a kid, it sounds like you were aware of what your strengths were and what they weren't, and that you used that to lean in one way versus another.
I would say I've never been a person that really liked to like languish and I don't do this well. Now, I don't necessarily love rules. I feel like, you know, in school there are rules, at work there are rules, but I don't really love rules all that much. So whenever there's an opportunity for me to do something that is just like go with what you instinctually feel and nobody can tell you that you're doing it wrong or right, it is yours. I love those spaces. I love the freedom of those spaces.
Your parents were really great with exposing you to art and to the arts in general. What is the story of falling into illustration and into becoming a wood artist? Can you tell us how art has been in your life and how you started to express yourself in using those mediums?
Yeah. I'll be honest, I have always been like a creative person and some form of art has always been an outlet for me. You know, there was a time, especially like very early in the pandemic and even before the pandemic, where I was really into sewing. So I sewed a lot, but I got tired of it. And then I started like experimenting with something called alcohol ink art, and I really enjoyed that, but I also kind of got tired of it. And 2020, after like so many things happened, and I felt like everything that I saw was just like negative. It was like wet trauma porn, honestly. It's like every place that I turned, it was somebody being murdered or beat or harmed. It was Black and Brown people not getting like appropriate testing and PPE. I just felt like there was so much negativity that I was seeing, and it was really like hard for me to just like deal with. So I started drawing really to get out some of the emotions that I had. I just like needed an outlet because I was by myself. It was a pandemic. The only people I really saw were my coworkers, and I needed some way to get out what I was feeling. So I started to draw images. My first illustration was really kind of like a frustrated one. It was like me with a fist shirt that said freedom. And it was very much about like, I am so sick of this. And then once I kind of got that frustration out, what naturally came to me to draw were images that more celebrated our existence in this country than perpetuated all the negativity that we were seeing. I really started to focus on drawing images of Black love and love, not just like, you know, a romantic partner, but love from a parent to a child, love between friends, especially love from a Black man to their children. I really wanted to show our humanity in the images that I was creating and reflect on that and reflect on positivity instead of just continuing to see negative, negative, negative everywhere I turned. And it really helped me, I think, to be able to create the images that were reflections of what I know and put them out there, because what I was finding is that other people also kind of like had a craving to see some positivity, and they resonated with the art. They resonated with these images that were like just innocent and loving. And that made me want to continue to create more and more and more. So that's really how I got into illustration. And I really just thought I was doing it as a hobby until someone reached out to me and said, hey, we would like to represent you as an illustrator. And I was like, oh, well, okay, let's do it. So that is how I got into illustration.
It's interesting to me how you said you got into illustration. And how did this happen? Were you taking classes along?
I was, you know, pandemic frustrated. And I decided that I was going to treat myself. So I bought an iPad because I just wanted to treat myself. And I have a coworker that I used to share an office with. And she said, you should get this program. It's called Procreate. And people make pet illustrations on it. You could make pet illustrations and make money. So you should get this app. And I was like, okay. I have not done one pet illustration. No part of me felt like I needed to draw somebody's pug, though they are very cute. But once I had the iPad and the little Apple Pencil and I started exploring Procreate, the images that I really wanted to kind of get out were more of us and less of what, you know, any old person could do or would do. I've always kind of like liked to draw. I've always experimented with different forms of art. And, you know, when I started illustrating, there were other digital illustrators online that I loved their work. I could not replicate what they did. It just didn't work, right? Like what I saw somebody else do didn't feel right or seem right or come out right when I tried to do it. So I ended up kind of creating a style that felt a little bit more my own because I just like, I didn't have a voice trying to use somebody else's voice.
Oh, that's really cool. So you are a pharmacist.
Yes.
You are not the first pharmacist to be on this podcast.
Very cool.
Our very first guest that we recorded, the very first podcast episode, was with a pharmacist. So tell me about some of the things that you might have learned from your profession and how it kind of creeps into your work. Since you're in the healthcare space, you're able to see how Black and Brown people are treated, and so you want to change that conversation. But anything else that you'd like to share on the topic of how your work affects your creative work?
Yeah, that I am a palliative care pharmacist, which means that I primarily do symptom management and talk about people's goals and wishes when they are very sick and approaching end of life. I also spend a lot of time because of that with people as they like reflect on their lives and reflect on what it means to maybe be getting ready to die. And I also get to, I think, like follow patients pretty sometimes long term. So I see how things go right and how things can go wrong. And I also see how sometimes the decisions that are made or offered to patients are very different based on their demographics and socioeconomic status. For me, doing this work and really hearing from people, especially when they're like kind of at that point where you're reflecting on everything that's important about life, and hearing like continually people say that what I'm most proud of, what I love the most, what I regret about my life is the either the relationships that they have or do not have and have been able to maintain. So like their experience of love and people feeling like they lived with purpose. And so for me, that really encourages me to one, celebrate love and to promote love and self-love in what I create. And then also to really stay true to the purpose that I feel I have in terms of being an artist, to create art that uplifts and empowers Black people and reminds them of their beauty and value, the fact that they are good enough, not just good enough, they are great, they are wonderful just as they are. I feel like so often we see everything but that, and we are kind of taught and conditioned to pick ourselves apart, especially as women. So rarely do you see us encouraged and celebrated for celebrating ourselves and loving ourselves and being really forward with that, that I want to make sure that the art that I create is forward with that and is encouraging people to look in the mirror and be happy with what they see and proud of what they see and in love with what they see. And then also look out and see somebody else and see the beauty in them.
You do that very well. I feel like sometimes looking at your work, it's almost as if, you know, when a loved one strokes your cheek, it kind of feels like that. It's very tender.
Oh, thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about your style and how you've come to your very specific way of illustrating? And now we could start talking about wood.
So I think in terms of my illustrations, I do like it's realistic. The line portion of my illustrations are very realistic. But then the shading is a little bit more abstract. It's like abstract color blocking that I think promotes a celebration of a variety of hues and complexions of brownness, and really uses color to show contour, to highlight the contours of our faces that are pretty like uniquely us, but also leave room for like dead space or negative space. If you look at my illustrations, very rarely do I color a whole person's face or a whole person's body. It's usually, you know, the black lines, the outline, and then there are specific shapes and portions that really show contour that are different shades of brown. I pretty much only work with browns and neutral colors because they're to me calming. And I think having brown be the highlight is important to me because we are brown and brown is beautiful and I want people to see that. But also I want the art to be calming. I don't necessarily need to make something that's bold and in your face. I think I want to make something that feels very subtle and, like you said, kind of loving and just like you can exhale into, because I think in some ways that can be penetrating in a different way. It's funny because I have this like unique style of illustrating, and I used to have another business where I made backdrops for people's weddings. It's like a group business. And part of what I needed to do for that business was learn how to cut signs for somebody's wedding. So we had flower walls. We made flower walls. And at one point, I needed to cut like Mr. and Mrs. Jones. So I learned how to use the laser cutter so that I could cut Mr. and Mrs. Jones. But after I did that, I was like, now that I know how to use this machine, I wonder what it would be like if I cut one of my ladies into wood. I wonder what that would look like. And I think because my illustration style was so like blocked in a sense and curvy, it lended itself really well to be able to translate into you know, woodcuts. So I tried it. And when I tried it, I loved it. It just felt right to me. And I think working with wood has, I think, many different ways that it really resonates with me. One, it's a natural medium and I really want to celebrate natural beauty. So it feels like a fitting nod to the natural beauty of a Black person to use a natural medium. But then also my dad used to build things out of wood and taught me how to use power tools and would have me out in the workshop with him. So when I'm creating and I'm using wood, it also makes me feel connected to him, you know, in ways. And so that's really nice. The other thing that I like recently kind of came to and realized that it's like very true is that wood comes from trees. Trees are natural, beautiful, and life-giving in and of itself, right? But they are cut down and used for their strength and used for their beauty for other people's interests and not what they're naturally created to do. And I think oftentimes Black women are naturally beautiful and life-giving and cut down to be used by other people for what they want instead of letting them grow and develop into what they were naturally meant to be. So for that reason as well, I like to use wood because I feel like we are in ways connected to it.
What a gift your dad gave you.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are some things that you've learned about wood and working with wood that you never thought that you would know of before?
Yeah. So it's funny, as I have kind of grown in that space, I experiment more with different types of wood. And I learned that, one, you cannot get every wood in, you know, quarter inch sheet. It does not work like that. So I've learned how to mill wood, which is very interesting and not something that I ever thought that I was going to do. I also have kind of transitioned where I still use a laser cutter, but a lot of the pieces that I do now require me to hand cut a lot of the pieces that I use to construct the faces and figures. So I've become very good at using a scroll saw and other types of saws to accomplish what I'm looking for. And I think generally, honestly, I feel like the more I work with wood, the more I learn about it, because there's always something new that it's like, oh, but I wanted to do this. How do I make it do that? Do I burn it? Do I sand it? Do I polish it? It's like ever evolving, this relationship. And I really enjoy it.
Can you walk me through how you, from start to finish, you have an idea, mm-hmm. an illustration, perhaps you draw it out, and how do you transfer it to, I'm assuming you use a program, but you just said that you're learning to not even use a program and you just do it. So let's say, you know, you could easily just go to Home Depot to get your two sheets or whatever, like a sheet of wood. Can you walk me through what exactly the process would be?
Yeah. So I start everything as a drawing on my iPad, and then I use a program to convert the drawing to a file that the laser cutter can use. Initially, all of my pieces were like birch or maple, quarter inch ply. And I would stain the wood to show different shades of brown and reflect on how light hits brown skin. But one of my artist friends really pushed me to go a step further and to not stain, but to use different species of wood. And because one, I needed to, and two, she really challenged me that the message that I was trying to share about natural beauty would go further using the natural grain and the natural hue of the wood. Since I have expanded into using like other species and a lot of exotic woods, I still start everything with this quarter inch birch to get the basic frame, I guess, of the piece. But then each individual little section, like the cheekbone area or the chin or the highlight on your forehead, I will score with the laser on more exotic wood type, and then I will hand cut it later. I hand cut it with a scroll saw, and then I kind of, it's really like a puzzle. I put all of the pieces then together at the end. I will stack some to give more depth and dimension. Others, I may subtract some pieces to add more shadow, and then I will also like hand carve in some areas and sand and round certain edges and leave other edges kind of more crisp just to add more dimension to the pieces.
So those dimensions that you mentioned, are they in the original drawing that you created?
Well, so I mean, everything is flat when I originally draw it. And then as I'm starting to like cut a piece, like to work with it, I'll say, no, I want this piece to be darker. Oh no, I want this highlight to be like a brighter cut, like a lighter brown. Oh, I really want this highlight on the shoulder to come out more at you. Or, you know, when I'm doing that kind of like shadow under your chin and your neck, I'll maybe have that one be kind of like a shadowy and inlaid instead of being out more. So it's really just as I start seeing the piece come together, I'll I'll select which species feel like they fit and make sense, but I never really know, like, I don't know what type of wood I'm going to use for any piece before I start it.
As you're thinking about your work, I'm assuming that, you know, oftentimes we have to think about whether or not some of our pieces are commercially viable. Do you focus mainly on doing one-offs, or do you think about doing a series of work in terms of creating different price points, perhaps, for people to start collecting your pieces?
That is a good question. In some ways, I do kind of work in series. For the most part, especially with the woodworks, I've primarily been doing pieces that focus on Black beauty and Black hair. So it's either like a front-facing or side-facing portrait of a woman, or the back of a Black woman. So you're really focusing on her hair and the styling of her hair. There was another series that I did that was called Postures of Praise. And that one was more full body, and it really was a reflection on motion as a form of praise. In that way, like kind of the messaging that I want to get out, I do think about creating in series and not necessarily one-off pieces. In terms of like sizes and price point and just like the commercial aspect of things, I think when I originally started out, the pieces that I was making were relatively small. It was like 16 by 20. And I thought that was big. I was like, oh, I'm working really large. And I think as I learn more about the like fine art space, and I go to like museums and galleries, and I envision myself wanting to have my art there and go to art fairs, and I see the scale of work that's done in those spaces, it is definitely pushing me to create bigger and to be really intentional about making sure that the pieces that I create are one of a kind and very valuable in their creation. When I first started, I would say I could cut any one piece up to 5 times. So in my head, I was thinking, okay, I don't want to do a million of them, but I still was leaving room for myself to make, you know, more than one cut of any one piece. At this point, I really don't do that for the most, well, really, period. I don't do that. When I cut something and I make something, that's really it. I think that adds a level of uniqueness to my work and makes it more ideal for like art collectors, which is definitely the space that I really want to be in.
Yes. Yes. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. Even though I am creating larger and really focusing on the woodworks, the messaging that I want to put out is universal for everybody. And so for that reason, I still sell prints of my illustrations, and the prices are very low for that. So I have built in to the way that I create and the spectrum of what I create level so that people like universally have access. But for the larger pieces and the one of one wood pieces, yeah, I'm trying to sky is the limit on that one.
Well, I was going to ask you how you found your personal style, but I think we covered that. So this is kind of taking a bit of a left turn, but in past interviews that I've read of you, you mentioned that Their Eyes Were Watching God is one of your favorite books. I wanted to ask why it's one of your favorite books.
In high school, I was not much of a reader. Now I'll like read for fun when I go on vacations, but in high school, I was not much. There was one year where they had us read like tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. And I was like, any of this stuff, you guys are like, this is a lot. It's too heavy for me, guys. And then we got to Their Eyes Were Watching God. It was beautiful. I felt like the book was beautiful. I loved it. It wasn't something where I felt like I worried about what my Caucasian classmates would think. I think there were some books that we read that were in like dialect when I was in high school that I really like, I struggled with the fact that our whole class was reading it. I struggled with what would happen when we had to read out loud and things like that. But I did not have that experience with Their Eyes Were Watching God. And I loved that love story. It was sad and tragic, but the idea that she did find love and that even if that love was brief, it was worth it, was just like everything to my teenage self. And I that has still stuck with me. It was just beautiful. It really was. I love a love story.
I do as well. thinking about the discipline and the habits and routines that it takes to do the work that we do. Can you talk to me about some specific habits or routine you credit for your achievement and success thus far?
Is a really good question. I think part of what has really allowed me to grow as an artist is the fact that it is therapeutic for me. So it doesn't, every once in a while it feels like a job, but for the most part, it feels like my opportunity to release. And because it's my opportunity to release, I don't fret having to work on a piece. Like I really enjoy and look forward to getting to see how something will come together and come to life. So that propels me to want to go back at it, to continue to show up and go and work on these pieces, because I'm really excited to see what it's going to end up being. I think that is, it's like the curiosity and excitement that comes with creating a piece and seeing how it turns out in the end that really pushes me to continue to create and be disciplined in creation more so than anything else, because otherwise I am like all over the place. There's a lot of things happening in my brain at one time. But I think because I'm so excited to see how something will turn out, it's easy for me to go back to the art.
That makes a lot of sense. Sometimes people give really, really bad advice, and some people give really good advice. Can you talk to us about a piece of advice that you've received that has been absolutely horrendous? Just a bad piece of advice that you may have received.
There was somebody at one point that told me that I needed to pick a lane. They said that you cannot be a successful fine artist that people take seriously and continue to do illustrations, that you have to pick a lane. You cannot do both. I did not take that advice. I felt like that was another way of like setting rules and limitations. And for me, what art has been is limitless. So I don't want to be in a box. Art is my outside of the box. I don't want to pick a lane. I don't want to be in a box. I want to create all of the things that I think and feel and share them. And the people who resonate with what I'm creating are the people that will support my art journey. And if they don't resonate with what I'm creating, or they feel like it's not good enough because there's this other thing that I'm creating too that they don't take seriously, they're probably not for me. And so that's okay. I stressed, I think, about it a lot, thinking, okay, well, are people going to take me seriously? And then I just came to the realization that, like, this is, yes, I'm putting it out there and I want other people to partake in it as well, but this is for me. I don't want to limit what I create for me or limit the messaging or the reach of my messaging to the rest of the world.
Brilliant. The contrary to that is, what is one really great piece of advice that you have received over the years?
One really great piece of advice was the friend that told me that I needed to start experimenting with other species of wood. I cannot credit her enough, because it stretched me in ways that I did not expect. And as I see how my art has really transformed since I started working with other species, I surprise myself at times. And so I think that was a piece of advice and a challenge that really stretched me and made me grow in ways that, like, I'll forever be grateful for.
It doesn't feel good when you're going through that stretching phase.
No, I was
it
like...
It sure doesn't.
The first time I tried to cut a piece of ebony on the laser, I was like, this is not working. I like went over it 3 times and I was like, it's still not cutting. Now the wood is burning. I spent all this money on this wood and it's not ruining it. And what am I doing? But now that I have kind of gotten into the groove of things, it's really wonderful.
I read that you have a book, right, that you illustrated?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I illustrated a children's book. It's called Beautifully Brown. And the book is the result of a poem that kind of came to my head while I was driving home one day. And it's really a reflection on colorism. I think colorism is still a huge problem within our community. So often when people try to address colorism, it becomes a situation where they're pitting one complexion against another, or one set of shades against another. And I don't think that helps us. I don't think you should ever need to put somebody else down to lift yourself up. And so Beautifully Brown was really about sharing with little brown children that every shade of brown that we come in is beautiful, and that every shade of brown that we come in deserves to be celebrated, and that I can say I love my skin, and it encourages them to say I love my skin, because I don't think that we often say that, or we don't model that very much for children, but saying, look, I really love my skin. It is beautifully brown. It is, you know, like cinnamon or gingerbread, a beautiful, beautiful brown. I love the idea of that repetition, that modeling, talking about the skin that you're in as something that's really beautiful and to be celebrated, and seeing that every shade along that spectrum is beautiful, is equally beautiful and equally worthy of being celebrated. That was my contribution to the fight against colorism. No light skin versus dark skin, none of that. It is all skin is beautiful skin. All of these shades of brown that we come in are beautiful and worthy of being celebrated.
Well, that's a really great place to end. Thank you so much, Candace. This has been such a treat in Creole, in Haitian Creole, as well as in Creole from Guadeloupe and Martinique. There's a saying, moi maladao, and it basically means you make me sick. I love you so much. You've infected me. And I feel like your enthusiasm has infected me. And when my son comes home from school, I can't wait to tell him about his beautiful brown skin.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.